Howdy, and welcome to The Stoop. This is Cutter Gonzalez, your host. We have another twofer on this episode. I'm in conversation with the co-mayors of the fast-approaching Gimby Town, our national pro-housing convening, and all-around New Haven housing superstars Karen DuBois-Walton and Pete Harrison. Here's a little about them. Karen DuBois-Walton, PhD, is a visionary leader dedicated to empowering communities through education, advocacy, and equitable development. With a distinguished career spanning the realms of academia, public service, and nonprofit and philanthropic leadership, she has emerged as a tireless champion for equity, social justice, access, and opportunity. She serves as president and CEO of the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, and prior to that, served as president of Elm City Communities / Housing Authority of the City of New Haven. She spearheads initiatives to address systemic inequities in housing and community development, education, and economic access and opportunity. Dr. DuBois-Walton holds advanced degrees in clinical psychology, complemented by a wealth of hands-on experience in government, nonprofit, and philanthropy. Her academic background, combined with her passion for social justice, informs her advocacy efforts and shapes her innovative solutions to complex societal changes. Pete Harrison joined the Regional Plan Association in February 2022 as the Desegregate Connecticut Director, leading a statewide program to enact equitable and sustainable land use policies in Connecticut. In 2024, he became RPA's Director of Connecticut Programs. Pete previously served for a year as Senior Policy Fellow for Desegregate Connecticut, crafting the 80-member coalition's policy briefs, communication strategy, and local organizing campaigns, and helped pass the first statewide zoning reform bill in over 30 years. Prior to joining Desegregate Connecticut, Pete worked on the intersection of housing, climate, and land use policy as a research scholar for the Buell Center of Architecture at Columbia University. He co-authored a portion of the textbook Green Reconstruction, a curricular toolkit for the built environment, laying out a framework for graduate-level planning, architecture, and preservation programs to center equity and sustainability in their practices. Before that, he was the senior national housing advisor for the progressive think tank Data for Progress, where he co-authored briefs and articles on federal housing and land use policy, including the Homes for All report. He also advised on the presidential campaigns of Vice President Kamala Harris, Senators Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and former HUD Secretary Julian Castro. Pete has extensive political campaign experience, both as a former congressional candidate and as a volunteer for multiple candidates, including Representative Ocasio-Cortez and New York State Senator Julia Salazar. He spent over a decade as a local housing organizer in and around New York City. But Pete grew up in Avon, Connecticut, and holds a BA in history from the College of the Holy Cross and an MUP from Columbia University. He also teaches at the City University of New York. We're going to talk about housing in New Haven and throughout Connecticut, what to expect at Gimby Town 2025, and why New Haven is the perfect place for this year's convening. Lots to cover, so let's get started. Hey, Pete. Hey, Karen. Welcome to The Stoop. So glad to have you on.
Thanks for having us.
Great to be here.
Yeah, I am so excited. Pete, we've worked together a fair amount at this point now. Karen, this is actually our first meeting, and I'm very glad to meet you. I've looked over your bio a little bit and stuff, and I'm super excited to learn more about your work. And it's always great to have two all-stars on The Stoop. A lot of times it's one-on-one, which is fun, but the little three of us is going to be great. And we've got like so much to talk about here, so I don't want to burn too much time on little pleasantries and whatever else right off the top. I want to get in the meat of it. But also, like, I want to ask, especially since we don't all know each other as well, the question I ask every guest, which is, what is your why? Like, what motivates you to do the pro housing work in whatever form you do? Because we're all doing it in kind of different ways. But like, what is that grounding for you?
Yeah, Karen, you want to start?
Sure. Oh,
I have been deeply engaged in this work for a long time because of my just fundamental belief that people need a space to call home that is of their choice in the place where they want, the type of housing that they want, and it needs to be something that they can afford. And for me, that is rooted in childhood of growing up in different parts of the community that offered me an opportunity to see what it was like to live in rural, suburban, and city settings, and to know that my family had choice and mobility. And then to work for almost 20 years trying to improve affordable housing in New Haven, Connecticut, and just seeing that deep contrast in terms of what possibilities were available for families. I want for the families in my community the same things I want for my own family, which is choice about where they live, lots of opportunities to choose from towns, locations, and structures of housing. And if we're not going to fight for that, then we're going to continue to leave families with too few choices and too little opportunity.
Yeah, they say in good writing something is inevitable but unexpected, and I feel like me getting into this work was that. I had always been interested in cities, in social justice as a kid through college, but I really kind of accidentally got into this work in a place where I lived in Manhattan. We were part of a really big tenant organizing effort around a pretty bad corporate landlord in a huge lawsuit about rent stabilization. I, for lack of a better term, got radicalized from that experience. I had to go to basically fight these bogus eviction notices in housing court in New York City a few times because of some of the work that we were doing. And seeing, not so much for me, that came from a very comfortable background. My father was even an environmental attorney. So I knew showing up at housing court in New York City how to advocate for myself and where the landlord was really at fault. So I knew I was going to be okay. But seeing people before me and after me that were in incredibly dire circumstances, did not necessarily speak or read English, could navigate for themselves, that's a very radicalizing experience. And seeing how housing insecure really manifests for people was radicalizing. And that really got me interested in sort of structurally urban planning, and never would have thought in a million years I'd have the opportunity to come back to Connecticut, where I grew up, to be able to do this kind of work really across the state. And it's, really inspiring every day, but affirming every day that I get to do this in a place that I grew up, that I loved growing up in, and I want to see the best for my family and for other families just like Karen. And that's really why we're so excited to be hosting YIMMYTOWN in Connecticut this year.
Yeah, that is very exciting. I mean, YIMMYTOWN is such a great convening, and we'll fully get to YIMMYTOWN. But before we do, so you're from Connecticut originally, Pete, but you lived in New York. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, we actually moved to Connecticut when I was 5. I was born in Akron, Ohio. So me, LeBron James, and the Black Keys share one thing in common. But yeah, after college, I moved down to New York City. Very similar story to a lot of people that grew up in Connecticut. They leave college and go someplace else. And I was in the city for 16 years and met my wife. Got my master's degree, started a family. My son was born there, but I really thought I would stay in New York City, and that's kind of the vision I'd had for myself and for my family. But we just could not afford to stay in Manhattan. Certainly, the one bedroom apartment we had that we got during an awesome COVID deal was not a long term solution, and childcare costs were even worse. So part of the opportunity and timing for me just worked out that, Desegregate CT was up and running, and Sarah Bronin, who had started it, was transitioning off and really recruited me and sold me on coming back to Connecticut. And parents were a little bit older as well. So, the draw of being able to have a little bit more stability and being able to do meaningful work back in my home state was pretty great.
That draw is real. We call it the siren song because I'm here in Austin, right? And I work for the Welcoming Neighbors Network, doing kind of coordinating team national level stuff. And we just got out of a legislative session, and I was always having to balance the siren song of the Texas Ledge happening just up the road versus like, okay, I got to focus on like I've got, you know, how many members of WNN across the country that need the communication support. It's real. I love that, the deep roots. And Karen, I don't know your background in New Haven or Connecticut, but you're a leader in the space there. Could you tell me about that a little bit?
Sure. So, Pete, I feel like we like crisscrossed across New York and Connecticut. So I'm born in New York City, and lived there in my like earliest childhood, and then moved to the Albany, New York area, where I lived in Albany and in a suburb of Albany, and then out to Western New York, out near Buffalo, where I lived in a very rural area, and then a suburb. So as I say, I've sampled the full array of sort of types of neighborhoods, and came to New Haven as a college student, and chose to really really love New Haven. Loved a lot of what New Haven and the region had to offer, and it chose to make that home into my adulthood. But you know, one of the things that I experienced moving from New York City, or even the city of Albany, into the suburban and rural areas, was that with each move, it was harder and harder to find a community where families that looked like mine live. And for those listeners that can't see me, right, it was harder and harder to find community that felt very integrated, where there were Black families and white families and Latino families and Native families, you know, and Asian families all living. And so with each move away from an urban center, communities started to be more and more racially exclusive. And I think it raised as childhood a lot of questions about, you know, what just a sense of sort of belonging and loneliness, sort of in terms of a racial grounding, that became part of the questions that I pursued in my professional life, about sort of wanting to understand why community migration patterns were the way they were, and pretty quickly realizing that it wasn't anything endemic in people. There's nothing about Black families that draws them in, because of nature, into cities, right? That cities were, that the housing patterns we see are very much the results of decisions that were made. And that was that sort of moment to say, well, then we can make different decisions too, that give people different opportunities and pathways. So I took a pretty circuitous route from undergraduate at Yale. I got my graduate work I did in Boston, but came right back to New Haven and worked in and around things that were not so related to housing, but all came back to housing. So I helped. I'm a psychologist by training. I worked with families who were dealing with very challenging issues, and one of the challenges and stressors in their life was very often housing. I worked in city government on directly on a whole lot of things, and the, you know, the central question came often back to housing policy, to property tax related to housing, to neighborhood investment, and then spent almost 20 years working in affordable housing, where obviously housing was the very central question. And I just reflect on, you know, Pete's why, and saying, you know, he got radicalized. And it's interesting to hold the notion that anyone would think a radical idea that we're trying to have people have homes, right? And that is, at its core, I think the most basic thing that we can do is to ensure that people have homes they can afford, homes in places of their choice. And so I'm excited to have found these other folks who want to do that, quote, radical work. Which to me is just the very basic work of meeting folks' basic needs, and helping them have opportunity.
There's this kind of reframing that we talk about a lot at this book club I run here in Austin that seems appropriate here, where like what's now seen as radical is really only radical in the context of how the status quo is constructed, you know? And like the status quo is kind of shit in a lot of places. It's like not great, very exclusionary. I mean, both of you come from types of work that center the social justice and the racial justice elements of housing in ways that I think are really important. And some of us who don't have that same either lived experience or just that perspective or that learning don't always get. And that to me is a really critical thread to pull out as we're like working on housing supply issues in a lot of places, especially like we can't lose the other parts of the housing equation, which I really, I mean, in reflecting on both of y'all being on this podcast, I think it's a really super unique gift to this space to bring. And I appreciate that perspective so much. And Yimby Town is going to be a neat place to digest those ideas. But I'd be remiss if before we got to Yimby Town, we didn't spend at least a brief moment talking about what's happened in Connecticut. Because y'all just got a bill that I think is known as Work Live Ride passed, right? And it's now waiting on the governor's signature, I guess. Pete, can you fill me in here?
We're in an interesting place as we are recording this. Our big proposal over the last few years is Work Live Ride, as you said. It's really about building a state capacity for helping local governments build more transit-oriented communities. Connecticut is a very suburban state, but it does have a pretty great rail network and bus network, and that's where we want to see the growth in Connecticut from an equity standpoint, from an environmental standpoint, and an economic standpoint. So we've been working away on that, and every year getting a little bit further, a little bit further. This year, we really expected Work Live Ride to pass, and we're in a pretty strong position to do so. We were also part of this really big sort of aircraft carrier bill, HB 5002, and there are a lot of other really good pieces in the bill. Some things we advocated for directly, some things we didn't advocate for but supported, and just a whole lot of other stuff. So it's a 93-page bill with 45 different sections touching on the entire spectrum of housing in Connecticut. It's helping on some homelessness services and banning hostile architecture in public spaces, all the way up to rental assistance, support for public housing authorities, up to Work Live Ride, and even some other places around parking mandates. We have probably the most ambitious parking reform on the East Coast in this bill. Pretty good commercial conversion bill as of right for missing middle housing. And what's known as Towns Take the Lead, but it's sort of the fair share proposal in Connecticut, which is very controversial, but basically sets some aspirational goals for towns to get to. But that's all together in one big bill. It was a big, spicy meatball all through the legislative session and passed comfortably in the House, passed comfortably in the Senate. The governor's team has been involved in the conversations and pretty supportive. But I think the backlash that came from it passing finally in the Senate sparked a lot of opposition and made the governor take pause. We still expect him to sign the bill, but there's going to likely be a special session in the legislature over the summer to tweak things. We're not exactly sure what that means yet, but our legislative champions feel pretty confident it's nothing really existential. But yeah, it's really hard to do things everywhere and certainly across the network. But in Connecticut, because of the dynamics here, it's been very challenging. So we're all really excited we're this far. A little bit of trepidation right now, but still pretty comfortable this ship will land, and we can celebrate at Yimby Town.
Yeah, this space of bill has passed the legislature and is sitting on someone else's desk is terrifying. I know from just the work all across the country, like when it's done, it always seems like it was inevitable, right? Like, oh, of course the governor vetoed, oh, of course the governor signed. But you're living in this tension, and we like have not talked about this enough, like what this feels like and how to have a voice in the conversation at this point. And I'm curious if y'all are doing anything to try and reaffirm support for this package for the governor to have the assurance that like this is something the public wants, this is something there's a reason both chambers passed this, or is it more of a like the governor's gonna do what the governor does? They know what decision to make. Like, what's the strategy here?
I don't care if you want to jump in.
I was going to say, all hands on deck. I think the advocacy push that has gone out has sought to educate all the supporters and others who can potentially be brought into the net around sort of where we are. Because, I think on this front and on a lot of fronts, our communities need a whole lot more around civic education. And we're sort of a far away from remembering the little song about how a bill becomes a law and all the pieces in it. And so it's been sort of a reminder, yes, we made it over a couple of big hurdles, but it's not done until it's assigned. And so there's been across, and one of the great things of the way Pete described this big bill is that it meant that there were a lot of different advocacy groups who were engaged in this. So each of those groups have activated their networks to say, "Hey, like, make sure the governor signs this, and that this is not over yet." So, great advocacy on the part of Live Work Live Ride, but on all aspects of the bill as well.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty key strength for this bill. I mean, from a process standpoint, the reason this bill is so big, so much stuff is crammed into it is, the dynamic in the Senate in Connecticut is fairly challenging, and there's unlimited debate, and that has been, I think, abused, as many would say. So getting a number of small bills through is almost impossible. So it really is going to take one shot to get something big through, and everybody coming together has been really helpful. It's the whole spectrum of housing. You have different types of advocates at different parts of it, advocating that. And Governor Lamont has a particular, he's a local control guy. He's from Greenwich, one of the wealthiest communities on earth. And but he gets it really from an economic standpoint first of how much housing Connecticut needs for its workforce and for families and seniors. And so that's kind of where we felt he's starting from a yes, and maybe would benefit from a call in to really say, remember what the stakes are and why we're here and how hard it's been to get the state to step up on housing and how a lot of the goals the governor has are really being met in this bill. And unfortunately, in Connecticut, there is somewhat organized opposition that I generally think operates in really bad faith and does a lot of fear mongering and misinformation, to Karen's point about just educating people on what the bill actually does and doesn't do. I think where the backlash came in this case was this is the first time in a long time that a really big housing bill has passed. A lot of people that don't pay attention, haven't really had to pay attention, were suddenly, wait a minute, something big just happened. And the first point of information has generally been misinformation, and that's ripped through the internet and Facebook town pages and stuff. So a lot of that is just really educating the public on what is in the bill. And that's where, again, I think the governor's actually been pretty good on this too, of really trying to calm people down and say there's been a lot of crazy talk about this bill, but fundamentally, we need to build more homes, we need more resources to do so. And this does that. So that's kind of why, through all the ups and downs in the last week or so, it's been still fundamentally, we think the governor will sign it, and still feel confident about that. But it shouldn't be this hard. I mean, that's the irony of this, is as hardcore as this bill has been presented, it's still pretty incremental as terms of the need in Connecticut. So we think it'll make a big difference and help point us in the right direction, but it's not a silver bullet. So I could totally see in a couple of years, once this thing passes, people complaining that if it didn't do anything, when I think things take a little while to settle in. But so we're constantly battling the expectations game and the representation game, but we're all really, really excited about it. And I do think Yimby Town has been helpful, certainly in the legislature and the governor's team, of saying the entire national pro-homes movement is going to be paying attention to Connecticut and New Haven, and what do you have to show for yourselves if this big thing is coming? And I think that's been on the radar for a lot of people. So that's been very helpful with that in the background.
You're so right on so many of the things you shared there, that like, and the whole expectation that it does too much, and then you find out because it was made incremental, it did too little, and then there's like, well, we didn't actually accomplish anything. You're like, well, that's because it was watered down, and then it's like, oh my gosh, it's such a cycle. I'm sure this bill will accomplish many, many things if, or when, we should say when, it's signed by the governor. But that is so real. Managing those expectations is hard. It sounds like you have a strong coalition, though, that helped keep this solid, and it sounds like you're in a relatively good place.
Yeah, I just think, we as a sort of as a people are like eager for simple solutions to things that are so complex. And as the bill needed to be sort of as big as it is in some ways, because there's so many components that are driving housing unaffordability in our communities, and that are stunting the growth that we need. And and so we are consistently trying to educate folks that this is a all-in kind of strategy. There's no one magic thing that's going to, if you just pass this, it results in this. We're constantly against the time, that just the time delay in things, right? That you don't build housing overnight. And so, you get something passed, and there is no immediate, I mean, more money into housing assistance, families will feel obviously more quickly than the money that's going to actually create, hard units. But in any case, there's this delay between when something happens and when people feel it. And in a sort of society primed for immediate gratification and simple solutions, we've got a pretty complex thing that we're selling. And also the reminder that we didn't get to the situation we're in overnight, right? And so we're holding coalitions together, building coalitions, strengthening those coalitions through a whole lot of education about things that people don't talk about every day. I mean, there were a handful of folks who can talk about zoning the way Pete can talk about zoning. Most folks, don't, that it's just not the language or the lens that they think about. And so fear mongering can happen pretty easily in that vacuum or in that absence of information. And people can be led to believe that the passage of this means a 20-story high rise coming in, right, in your quaint little town. We have a much more complicated story to tell often. And so that's why the investment in walking tours, taking people out, showing people things, the work that's been done around polling and helping people see what the broader community conversation and consensus is around ideas, narrative change, but making these things real, like introducing you to the real folks who are helped by this. All of that, I think, has been part of the long-term strategy that's gotten us to the place where the bill is passed both sides of the legislature, and now, waiting any day now for signature.
Yeah, that narrative, the kind of gap in the ease of misinformation versus the difficulty of telling the truth is it's hard to navigate, especially on things like this where you are talking about change to communities. You're saying like you're having to argue the case that like, yeah, communities do change over time, and that the change that's often been felt as a result of status quo in really extreme ways. Here in Austin, for example, I mean, the way that like the way development has resulted from prior patterns of racial and economic segregation has resulted in substantial displacement of communities of color or of less economic advantage. And then you're trying to tell people, but we have to let more development happen, and it's like there's a hurdle there. I mean, the fact that you've made it this far proves that you've made substantial strides on that in Connecticut. And I think places like y'all, like Austin, like some of these others that are doing the work, it's starting to see results in like public opinion change, but that's a real battle. And Pete, I think you said, oftentimes the first bit of information they get is misinformation, and that's real. It's so real. But I think, I mean, y'all are both excellent storytellers in the space, and you combine subject matter expertise with a willingness to work on story. And I think that certainly not only empowered this win, but also then like bolstered the capacity to hold an event like Yimby Town and like bring everyone into your front yard and say, let's talk about how we do this whole housing thing. So the host of Yimby Town this year is Desegregate Connecticut with and a variety of partners that support it, right? And I'm wondering, Pete, especially if you could walk us back a little bit about like how we got to this point where you're like making these narrative changes and you're bringing the whole movement into New Haven, and like how did we get here? What's the story?
Yeah, I mean, it goes back a couple of years, and I wasn't able to go to the Portland YIMBY town. I just had my son, but really excited to be working in that space. This was really early days of the Welcoming Neighbors Network and what it was growing into. So knowing you're doing this work in a really tough political space is helped by having a community of like-minded folks doing it elsewhere, and just that community of trading ideas and bucking each other up was really inspiring for me, even from afar. So, and I also thought it would be such a galvanizing moment for Connecticut. There are a lot of little groups doing great coalition building, and it's kind of a community that works together pretty well. But there are philosophical differences and strategy differences. But sometimes Connecticut can be very insular, and we don't look positively outside of for ideas, certainly from a legislative standpoint. So we thought pretty quickly if we could get YIMBY Town into Connecticut, it wouldn't be really celebrating a big win, which has happened in other YIMBY towns. It'd be driving towards wins. And really, could we get everybody excited in Connecticut in the community? And could we get that on the radar of legislators to say, it's not just a couple of advocates talking about wonky stuff. It's real life experiences and building homes. And it's not a blue or red thing. It's not a city or suburban or rural thing. It's everywhere. Looks a little bit different. So we thought that'd be really exciting for the Connecticut story. And then there is actually, despite how slow and painful it is, there is very cool stuff happening across Connecticut, and certainly in New Haven. I mean, it became very apparent to me that we should host it in New Haven because it's a really fun city and there's a lot going on, but there's a lot of really innovative housing things happening. And when Karen was still with Elm City's Communities, I'd reached out to her early on to say we should try to do this. And Karen was gung-ho about it, and it's really taken Elm City's Communities into some really innovative paths, and we should tell that story. So we didn't get it last year, and Austin was a blast, and we wanted to try again, and just very quickly rallied a lot of different stakeholders in Connecticut that just obviously got the idea of how fun it would be objectively, how cool, and promotion of the work we're doing. So yeah, it came together, and I think we kind of blew the committee away. Just we had, I think, like 20 people, Karen, on that Zoom interview the first time, which I don't know if that had happened before, and I highly recommend the next host doing that. So I think there was, talking to folks that hosted last year on the committee, were just, wow, you guys really, came deep and came correct and just seemed so enthusiastic about it. And we really did have a cool story to tell about what's going on in New Haven and elsewhere in Connecticut. So things came together, I think, in a really pretty exciting way. And the funny part is, like, I think we will have pretty big wins to actually celebrate at YIMBY Town because of this. So that's, cherry on top for a lot of us.
Pete really was a driving force in getting all of us on board with the application. It was a fun process, but I just want to lift up also the importance for me of doing this work in New Haven. For almost 20 years, I ran Elm City Communities, which is the public housing authority for the city of New Haven, and inherited a portfolio of housing that, for reasons that are well known and documented around the federal government's initial boom of building that was very quickly disinvested in. Just too little resource going into the portfolio over time had worn. And we had thousands of families living in conditions that I would not move my own family in or ask you all to move your families into. And so we set upon a really ambitious redevelopment initiative where we said we could rebuild this whole portfolio, and we could do it in ways that don't reinforce some of the past mistakes that were made in this very city around urban redevelopment and urban renewal, and things where the scars are felt, seen, continue to exist, and also felt deeply in families. And so we knew we could do it in ways that would create high quality housing, that would not displace people, and that would connect the housing to the community in ways that offered people greater opportunities. And so that team now, I've moved on. That team is well on the way to having rebuilt that whole portfolio, which then also offered the opportunity to start looking at what else can we get involved in. And we had to, because our wait list was ever growing and wasn't going to be reached just by the existing housing. And this call into, doing this work got me very much aligned with the folks who were doing the advocacy work, because it was so clear that there were local and regional and statewide changes that needed to happen in order to meet the scale of development that was necessary. And so we became advocates of change within New Haven and statewide. And New Haven has been, it is, it lives to its name of being a haven. It's been a welcoming place. It's been a place that's been innovative and wanted to try new things. And it's also a city that's got the scars of old innovation that, that went in directions that weren't helpful to today. And so we've had the benefit of local leadership over the past few administrations that have really tried to think about how do we grow as a city? How do we take advantage of what naturally is here and are the strengths here? How do we build upon those? And how do we make some changes in housing policy and practice that are going to actually promote growth? And so there's been a tremendous boon in development across the income spectrum, market rate growth, the affordable development that Elm City Communities does, but also other partners in there. But it's been in this context of trying to figure out how to do it to make it a more walkable city, bikeable city, more sustainable city, more connected city, and to try to re-envision something that doesn't just cement greater segregation. And so there's a story to tell here, and there's a ton of work still to be done. And that's the balance I think we want to keep pushing, and keep advancing good policy that's going to keep moving us forward in ways that become a good thing for the families here and that want to be here, becomes a model for other places in our state, and across the country. And we want to continue to be a place that's learning from the examples of others. So Yimmy Town, sitting here in New Haven, I think is going to be very exciting opportunity for us to both share and learn. And I'm thrilled to be part of it and excited for it to happen.
This feels like the all of the above Yimby Town, in a in the context. Austin is a very different, obviously different climate, different everything in that regard, but different political context and historical context than what we're going to see in New Haven. And Austin is a relatively young city. If you look at our founding date, it looks older than the city as a city. It really is, and I feel like we've done a lot of things to try and start building anew, and y'all have just a whole other legacy to talk about in New Haven, which Karen, you're touching on, and that's so exciting to me. I love the like all of the above, get into the weeds, like everything from public housing to market rate housing to transport and the whole bit. Like I love running the gamut. So New Haven is exciting, and I've never been, so I'm excited to go to New Haven for the first time. I unfortunately, despite being in Austin, I only got to go to a very small amount of the Austin Yimby Town, because the day before the conference, we had our Welcoming Neighbors Network like pre-convening, and I was biking home feeling really great on a high from the day, and was going overzealous on my electric bike and broke my ankle and my rib. So this is practically my first Yimby Town. I did like the pre-convening and like some of the like keynotes from the Austin Yimby Town, but y'all are like my first real full go at it. So that I feel really lucky actually in a
Oh
way.
man, I'm sorry, Connor. I don't know if I knew that. That's
Yeah. It was a whole stupid thing. I like had a great first day and then like got wheeled in for the second day. It was horrible. Obviously I'm healed up now. I'm fully back to where I was before, and I got back on the e-bike as soon as I could, but did not get to enjoy Yimby Town fully. And this Yimby Town, by the way, this day two is my birthday, so we're celebrating.
Oh, okay. Yeah, we're on notice.
New Haven doesn't know what's coming. So, but it sounds like y'all are well equipped. But y'all have had a little bit longer history with this conference and stuff too. I think is it like a decade old now, Pete?
It started in 2016 in Boulder, and COVID disrupted it. I don't think it happened a few times during COVID, but yeah, we are the second East Coast location. Boston hosted in 2018, and shout out to Jesse and the Abundant Housing Massachusetts folks, and they took that as a galvanizing moment for their organization too. So that was something that we looked at and thought, hey, we could scale that up too. And I think what's been cool about Yimby Town is it has gotten bigger every year, and more people are aware of it. There's been more coverage for it, and a ton more groups are doing this work in very different political spaces, which is very cool. And we definitely have our all the above approach, and we want to talk about social housing and market rate and really every type of possible version of this. But I do think the through thread is it's still bipartisan. It's still what's going to work in small Midwestern state or a coastal red state or coastal blue state, small blue state. There are going to be different solutions. And that, to Karen's point, is what's so fun about this too, is we're going to learn a lot. This movement is really growing, and there are some pretty significant winds in some very different parts of the country, and getting everybody to talk about just reinforces the momentum and the excitement. So, we want to have our vision of what our work is in Connecticut, and as representative as we can be of people's experiences in Connecticut and the advocacy community that we're in coalition with. But we definitely want to make that big tent big and bigger. So we're definitely going to have a lot of the different political orientations coming and conversing. It's going to be great. And we were also very conscious this year, something that came up in Austin, and maybe I was just more attuned to it because at Regional Plan Association, we do housing work, we do transportation work and energy work. And I think there was a hunger in the YIMBY Pro Home space of how do we draw in some of these other really important challenges? And is it good for the movement to say we just want more houses anywhere, or are there places we shouldn't be building because of climate change? So there are a lot of those types of questions we really wanted to lean into. So, the environment's going to be a major theme of how do we stop sprawl? What is the role the insurance market plays and where people can live and afford to live? And who's going to be left behind if the insurance industry leaves in certain parts of the country? And Connecticut, we're incredibly bullish on having a lot more people move to Connecticut. It's 3.6 million people right now. We'd love 1.5 million more people by 2050. We think that's possible with, growth and internal displacement because of climate change. And we want to tell that from a positive perspective of how do we make Connecticut more inclusive and more open, and it's how everybody wins by that. So that's kind of a theme that we want to talk about. And certainly the element of public transportation, getting people out of cars, obviously, aside from a couple accidents here and there, getting more people on e-bikes, and that. So yeah, there are a lot of themes I think we've learned and built on in each different YIMBY town. And it's been cool from what I've heard about some of the other ones. It takes on the flavor of the city it's in and the state it's in and the organization, but it's still this big through line of building this collective movement. So I think we're a yes and to what the Yimby Town conference has been.
Yeah, I'm very excited for that. And especially because, I mean, like I said, Connecticut is such a different context than Austin. Like the vibe is just is different and like so cool. And I'm excited for that. And you mentioned the flavor, and I'd be remiss also if I did not mention, is it a pizza? Is that how you say it? Because I had no freaking clue. And then Pete, I think it was you and Nick send me like some stuff for the website, and you're like pro homes, pro a pizza or something. And I was like, what are they talking about? So for those of us who are in the Connecticut hinterland, Can you please explain?
Oh my goodness, New Haven, home of pizza, as most people call it, a beats here in if
Oh,
you're a
there you go.
real original New Havener, right? But yeah, we're excited to share with Yimby Town participants our brick oven fired pizza. There are some sort of local favorites that will want to know your input around which one did you like best. But yeah, there will definitely be pro homes, pro riders, pro pizza is our theme for this.
Yeah, I mean it's arguably the home of pizza in the United States, and you hear about the Chicagos and the New Yorks, but I think New Haven's right up there, and it's a fun part of the history and culture and the immigrant story of New Haven, and there's a lot more great food that we are updating the website literally as we speak of all the other cool restaurants in downtown and other great neighborhoods that it's all pretty close for folks that are coming into town. I actually think the Friday night before the Welcoming Neighbors Summit, there is going to be, it's the New Haven Grand Prix bike race, but there's going to be a attempt to have a Guinness Book World Record for the biggest pizza party. So if you're all coming in Friday night, you can participate in a record-setting event that seems extremely New Haven. So that'll a lot of fun, but we really want to highlight all the cool culture and immigrant history and current history of diversity in New Haven. And we've got some really great folks on the advisory committee meeting that represent different parts of the city and different backgrounds. And certainly would be remiss to say Yale University is deeply involved in this as well. And it's an anchor institution in the city, has a long history, and is also doing some really cool things on housing. And there's always the town and gown issues of any big university city, and there are going to be a lot of really great conversations about what New Haven means for Yale and vice versa. So I think people often poo-poo Connecticut as a drive-through state or kind of lame, and there's not a lot of truth to that in practice. And we're excited people are going to get off the train in New Haven or get off 95 and actually see what a great city this is. And that's just a little bit of a gateway to what Connecticut is for people. And we're really excited by how many people in New Haven jumped on board for Yimby Town and recognizing, hey, this is a cool way to amplify the really good things happening, a really good way to learn about what challenges are still here, and tell the story that's, I think, fundamentally optimistic, and full of energy for what New Haven and Connecticut could be in the future.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I am like, I love an in-person gathering. There's like lots of conversations about whether they're worth it because they're expensive. I mean, y'all know, y'all are co-mayors of this Yimby Town, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of, I guess I'm sort of breaking the tradition of the sort of host of it being the co-mayor. But I had sort of two reasons I didn't want to jump at that. One is stolen valor. I don't live in New Haven and felt like it would not be cool to host or to be the co-mayor. So Karen was very quickly the right choice for that. But I think the second thing was, how can we tell the story of Connecticut and New Haven, and and it's not really like Desegregated CT Regional Plan Association, we're the hosts, we're really excited about it, and we'll be all through the Yimby Town experience. But what story do we want to tell about New Haven? Who should is their best position to tell that story in particular? And Karen was the unanimous selection in the advisory committee, and we really are so excited to have Karen tell her professional story and personal story and just represent New Haven. And that was kind of a strong, inclination I had from the get-go. Although there have been people telling me I should be the co-mayor for the tradition, and I really, really respect the traditions of Yimby Town. But I thought this was kind of the direction we wanted to go as part of a coalition, and as instead of being like the lead of a coalition.
Now I'm excited as I approach this initially in my role at Elm City Communities, but as of November, I've been leading the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven. And our challenge is about creating a more connected, a more inclusive, a more equitable, and a more philanthropic Greater New Haven region. And so I'm excited about the opportunity to bring the work I've been doing around community development into the space that is intentionally about getting more and more people convened around it, educated around it, and investing in these kinds of solutions. And so certainly deep New Haven roots, and also this opportunity to think about this 20 town region that each town has its uniqueness, but the commonality across all of them as it relates to Yimby Town is that every one of them are trying to answer questions about growth and housing affordability. And the communities have their own challenges and their own approaches, but all need to figure this out together, and we need to do it as a region. So excited to take this on and to connect it to work that a community foundation can be doing in this and talk to others who are interested in how to attract other foundations and philanthropists and folks into the work.
And I'll add too, just in respect to the rest of Connecticut too. And I live up by Hartford. I'm a Hartford guy. New Haven is the easy place to do this because it's so exciting. There's so many things happening there, and it's going to be fun. But Connecticut's small enough, and it could be a long weekend. It's this nice fall. Maybe people can stretch it out. But there are a lot of communities in Connecticut that are really trying to do some cool things around housing and land use as well. And the other cities as well. So we're going to have a great, great showing of the big city mayors, the small town first selectmen's, and people trying to do it in every little context of Connecticut, because there really are a lot of different challenges that have different flavors. And going back to what's going to be cool to learn about this is, a Rust Belt city in Connecticut has similar problems to a Rust Belt city in Wisconsin, and there are people in both those places, maybe one's blue, maybe one's red, that are trying to solve these problems. So we're just really excited to bring the movement into New Haven and Connecticut to get all the people we're working with and cultivating in the Pro Homes movement to connect with other similar types of folks, or maybe different types of folks, but all kind of going in the same direction.
And for those who don't know, Yimby Town has a host and then like co-mayors who are kind of like the lead facilitators, more or less. So Pete, being humble and not wanting the co-mayor title, is honorable and is also Karen, now you're the one we're gonna have to campaign around. You're gonna have to unify us around our housing movement here. So good luck. It's your job. You're up to it, but no, that's amazing. It's going to be a great time. And by way of teasing what's to come, I know I'll put a link to the website and where people can register and all that, of course, in the show notes and in the other material. But could you give us a little hint of some of the folks who might be joining us and speaking? Because there are some big names that y'all have secured.
Yeah, we've been really pretty excited about the keynote folks that we have announced so far. A few more coming, but I'm going to try to do this in the order. But we have Daryl Fairweather, who's lead economist for Redfin. I think she's on the Dallas Fed. Just wrote a great economics book, Hate the Game, and she's been somebody that's been pro homes really throughout her professional career, and is really someone that talks a lot about this all the above approach that we talk about: public housing, private housing, own rent. I think she'll give a really good tone set for what the movement means and how this tent keeps growing. We're also incredibly excited and humbled that Bill McKinnon is coming to speak about the role that climate advocacy plays in the pro homes space, and he's really just one of the legends in environmental advocacy, and has this new group. I think it's Third Act, about older retired folks getting active in environmental advocacy, and he's been a big communicator for how important the Broholm's movement is for environmental sustainability and anti-sprawl and reduced energy consumption from density and urbanity. So we're really excited for him to be coming, and frankly excited for that demographic. Connecticut is pretty close demographically, diversity wise, for the United States. It's an older population, and a lot of our advocacy community and coalitions are older adults as well. So we want to have, those kinds of voices and those kinds of experiences as well. AARP has always been a big coalition partner. So Bill's not just doing work on the environmental side, but also just an older demographic staying advocate side. We have the governor of North Dakota, Kelly Armstrong, who was in Congress before that, was one of the, lieutenants for Kevin McCarthy. And he's just a great red state governor, advocating for a lot of the same things we're doing in a blue state, and has really tried to make a pretty big difference in North Dakota. Is relatively new on the job, but has been just a great preacher of these bipartisan solutions. And I think he's going to have a really great perspective that will resonate with, I think, for people outside of Connecticut, would be surprised, but it'll resonate with quite a bit of folks in the region that might not, from a blue state perspective, think that's the case. So really excited to have him working on some others, which we will hopefully be announcing soon. But really want to give a shout out to a lot of the folks on the advisory committee that's been putting in a lot of labor, putting out the submissions for panels, and we're working with the YIMBY Congress, the YIMBY caucus in Congress, to have folks from both parties in the DC talk about what's going on there. We're working with the U.S. Conference of Mayors to have a bipartisan mayor panel. I think that's going to be really exciting. All the folks in the Welcoming Neighbors Network, I think, are well represented. We're also really excited that we're starting what is, I hope, a new tradition at Yimby Town by having the Donald Shoup Parking Award. And Donald Shoup, of course, was really the godfather of parking reform in the US. Unfortunately, passed away last year, but he's a double Yale grad. And we reached out to our buddies at the Parking Reform Network to say we'd really love to honor him and his work by starting a parking reform award. And Parking Reform Network will owns that award, and hopefully it'll be continuing to be in Yimby Town or elsewhere. But we're really excited about that. We've got some great candidates, including some folks in Connecticut, once the governor signs this bill. So I think that's going to be a really cool tradition that's going to get started as well. So yeah, we're trying to build on everything that's done in the previous Yimby Towns and all the labor in this movement that's gone into making this event a little bit bigger every year. We're really excited to keep honoring that and, try to bring some new traditions to it as well, and some new voices and some new speakers, particularly on climate and transportation. So a lot is still coming out. So get your tickets, get your hotel rooms before they book up. But yeah, we'll have some surprises and some fun activities in the works as well that we'll be announcing, as we get closer to hype up everybody.
That's exciting. It's a lot to look forward to here. And I'm eagerly awaiting as much as anyone else. Like, who else are we gonna have? It's always such like an all-star slate because of the work that hosts like y'all do to bring them in. And it's just incredible that we get to do this basically every year. And we're getting close to our time here, but I do want to just open up the floor. If you have anything you want to share, whether that's about Yimby Town or New Haven or work, live, ride, or whatever else, I want to open up space because y'all are just such wise stewards of what we do, and I'm curious what else is on your mind.
I'll just add to Pete's pitch there. This is going to be an amazing conference. It's been really fun to look at the submissions of what folks are proposing in terms of the content, and you'll be in for lots of great content on that front. But if you have not been to New Haven in the past 10 years or so, like, it's going to be a whole new experience. I just encourage you to come. And if you've never been to New Haven, certainly come and see what's afoot here, and take advantage of all that we have to offer here. It's going to be a really amazing time, and it's going to this is just the beginning of a whole host of other things that we're going to be doing to continue to advance a pro housing agenda here, because at the end of the day, there are far too many families who are struggling in our region, with housing insecurity, paying far too much toward their housing expenses, and we are limiting our ability to grow as a region in the way that we need to. So, come learn more about what we can do, and then encourage you to get into the movement with us. There's so many ways to be a part of raising your voice right now to get this bill signed, but to be a part of the movement for the things to come. And I really, really look forward to more and more folks letting it be known that while there may be some loud voices that fight this stuff, there are far more people who recognize that we're better together, and we're better as a community as we're growing and making more and more room for folks to be with us.
Yeah, I'll just echo what Karen said. And we approached this from day one as really a starting point or a continuation of the work we're trying to do for the Pro Homes movement in Connecticut. And we want as many folks in Connecticut that are hear about this conference coming to come and learn why this movement is so big and growing and bipartisan. And there's something really for everybody, depending what issue you care about. If you care about your community, you should care about the Pro Homes solutions around it. So we're really excited to take what we think is the momentum coming off of this bill into Yimby Town. We're excited to take the momentum I think we'll all feel from Yimby Town into continuing the work at a local level and at the state level. Connecticut is not often seen as a leader in a lot of things, and we're I think closer than many people would think about being a leader in this space, and that comes from a lot of advocacy and a lot of different people that are speaking up finally. And we just want to make space for them and give them some amplification at this conference and get to learn from other cool people. I will be very excited to attend the next Yimby Town, not having to organize it. But I will say it has been honestly a lot of fun with Nick from Desegregate CT and from Karen and other folks on the advisory committee. And I'm really excited to see everybody in person. We're really trying to get it hosted in the fall so you could really appreciate the beautiful fall New England weather. I think it's going to be still pretty warm, but the leaves will probably start turning around September 14th and 16th. So it's going to be a great opportunity to really see why Connecticut is this beautiful place and New Haven's a beautiful city, and looking forward to showing all that off to everybody.
It's funny when you all say mid-September as fall, because I know like technically fall begins in late September, but being in Austin, I'm like, oh, I'm still like, that's swimming weather. We're still good. So I am very excited on that front as well to be in the Northeast when there will be cooler weather. And just, it's so beautiful that time of year up there. And I haven't seen Connecticut with my own eyes yet, but I'm sure it will impress as much as other places I've been up there. And certainly this conference will, thanks to y'all's stellar work. So just want to say a huge thanks as a housing advocate, as the host of this podcast. Getting to have y'all in is a real treat. And as someone who's going to benefit so much from your work in Yimby Town, it's going to be a great way to spend a birthday weekend, and I'm very excited for it. So thank y'all for coming on. It means a lot.
Thank you, yeah.
So much.
During our conversation, you heard about the Work, Live, Ride bill heading to Governor Lamont's desk. Unfortunately, between the time we spoke and the date this episode aired, Governor Lamont vetoed the bill. This is a huge disappointment, of course, and one that we all hope will get fixed in the near term. But as you can probably tell by the conversation we had on air, the limbo between a bill passing the legislature and getting signed into law by the governor is a really tough place, filled with deep uncertainty and extremely tentative hopefulness. This tension is one I wanted to keep in the episode because it's a place all of us frequent, yet it's also where there's like the least available guidance. It is real, y'all. And regardless of Work, Live, Ride's temporary fate, I am so inspired by these two, and I absolutely cannot wait to join them in New Haven this September. The lineup of speakers, contributors, and attendees is a who's who of the pro housing movement. You won't want to miss it. To register for Gimby Town, simply go to gimby.town. That's YIMBY.TOWN. You'll see the blue registration button right away on the home screen. And from that site, you can also find lots of information about the conference and about New Haven. Gimby Town is also on social media. They're at gimbytown.bsky.social on Blue Sky and at Gimby Town on Twitter/X and Instagram. In the meantime, you can also connect with Karen and Pete's organizations online. You can find Karen's organization, the Community Foundation for Greater New Haven, at CFGNH on Instagram and Twitter/X, or visit their website at cfgnh.org. Desegregate Connecticut, where you'll find Pete, is at DesegregateCT on Instagram and Twitter/X. As always, you can connect with the Welcoming Neighbors Network online at welcomingneighbors.us and on social media. We are at WNN Pro Housing on Instagram and at welcomingneighbors.us on Blue Sky. The Stoop is produced in-house at the Welcoming Neighbors Network by me, Cutter Gonzalez. The music for our show was created by my friend Nolan Hopkins. If you have ideas for our show, including special episodes, guests you'd like to hear from, or topics you'd like to cover, shoot me an email at cutter@welcomingneighbors.us or DM me on social media. My handle is at CutterWGonzalez across all platforms. Thanks for joining us on The Stoop. Talk to y'all real soon.